Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was the youngest drill instructor in Marine Corps history at age 17. He became a Hollywood actor and played Wyatt Earp. In 1958, he spent 9 days with Dr. Albert Schweitzer in Africa, which transformed his life. He then founded the Hugh O'Brien Youth Leadership Organization, which has helped 365,000 young people achieve their goals. His name, Hugh O'Brien, the fastest gun in the West. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the fastest gun in the West, Wyatt Earp, Hugh O'Brien. Hugh, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm happy to still be able to talk at my age.
Can you talk about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. I had a very blessed childhood, and that's because I had very blessed parents. My mom and dad were very special and very, very supportive. Most of the things that I tried to do as a young person growing up, the way I was raised and the fact that we moved around a great deal in the beginning had a lot to do with my activity in the latter part of my life. But born and raised on the East Coast, primarily in the beginning, I must have been a very bad boy because about 3 months after I was born, we moved from Rochester and moved into Garden City, Long Island, and then we were there only about a couple of years, and we moved to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which was the home of the company that my dad worked for, Armstrong Cork Company at the time, it's now called Armstrong World, and they manufacture linoleum and back then insulation. And then from there, Dad went into the Chicago office and became the head of the company. Everything west of the Mississippi was at that time run out of Chicago, and was the first company to move in the merchandise mart there. And first 4, 5, 6 months, we stayed at what at that time was the Stevens Hotel on Michigan Boulevard. It's now the Hilton, the largest hotel in the world back then. And my first job was selling the Chicago Tribune when I was 4 years old at the L station. But it was a very special time for me in terms of going from, you know, from school to school to school until we bought or got a home out in Evanston, Rogers Park, and then Evanston. And by the time I got into the school there in Evanston, I'd been in all about 5 or 6 schools already because we moved around so much.
That's when
I took up the hobby of magic, sleight of hand, and which is a fun hobby of mine. And eventually the program that I started at Hobie, that is a program that is called Magic, but we'll get into that later.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
Well, my mother, for instance, when I did get into the so-called show business after the Marine Corps, and my dad was quite not happy about that at all because, you know, you don't know anybody. I mean, why do you think that you're going to be able to make a living in that? You've never had any acting training or anything like that. But my mother of my mother, and her attitude was, if Mickey Rooney can do it, Buddy can do it. My nickname was Buddy, or Hugh can do it. And my mom was very Irish, and my dad was a very disciplinarian German. There's also some Spanish, French and Spanish in my blood, but primarily Irish and German. And Dad, you know, he was a tough taskmaster. He, you know, if I wanted to, just for the privilege of living in our home and so forth and so on, I was responsible from when I got older to mow our lawn and do whatever I could to, you know, help around the house. And I, in the beginning, never got an allowance. So if I wanted an extra buck, I had to mow the lawn next door. And whatever it took to make an extra buck. I remember so well the dancing classes in the school that I finally wound up in Wilmette, where we bought a home. Dancing classes started in fifth grade, but I didn't have the money for it. So by the time I was going into seventh grade, I was able to start my dancing lessons, and I practiced for hours and hours in front of a mirror so that I could get out of the fifth grade dancing class up into my own grade dancing class. It took me about 3 weeks to do that. But I knew what it was to make a buck, and that's been that way my whole life. I still do whatever is necessary, and that includes if I need to wash windows or park cars, I do it.
At 17, you became a drill instructor in the Marine Corps, the youngest ever. How did that happen?
Well, first of all, my dad was a Marine in World War I, a Horse Marine. Secondly, I knew the Marine Corps hymn before I knew the national anthem. When we moved into Chicago and my dad got set up there, he joined the 9th Battalion Reserve, Marine Corps Reserve. And from the time I was about four on up to grammar school, every summer I would go to a Great Lakes training station, a naval training station, where they had the Marine Corps reserves would come in for the two-week reserve camp and different Marine detachments in that part of the country. And I would go with my dad. The officers were encouraged to bring their sons, and we had our own little pup tents and our own little piece, wooden rifle. And so I knew the manual pretty well. And when I enlisted in the Marine Corps when I was just after my 17th birthday, back then in 1943, anybody with any time in the Corps or stripes we needed over in the Pacific. And I relieved our drill instructor, who was a full-blooded Apache Indian. We call him Chief Timothy. And quite frankly, if you could get him to the mess hall without marching him through the barracks, you got the job. So that's what they asked me to do, and I did. And very proud of the fact that out of five or six platoons, whatever, I had four of them that were honor platoons. In other words, the number one platoon going through boot camp. And it was a great learning experience.
We're talking to Hugh O'Brien. When we come back, we'll ask him how he ever became an actor and how he became Wyatt Earp. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Hugh O'Brien. Hugh, how did you ever become an actor, and how did you get the role of Wyatt?
Well, I got about 200 directors that probably don't think I'm an actor. But anyway, it's a fun business. I loved doing what I did. It's a long story in terms of how I got started, but quite simply, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I came out here to earn enough bucks to buy a car and go to Yale, which is where I was going to study to become an attorney. But it turned out okay because after I got into the business, whenever I played attorneys, I got paid more and I won all my cases. But the way I happened to fall into it or whatever is that I was dating a gal that was doing a little theater work. And if I wanted to see her, I would go and pick her up at the rehearsal, and we'd go out and have a cup of coffee or whatever afterwards. And about the fourth or fifth date or whatever, I went to pick her up, and the leading man, one of the leading men on the show, didn't show, and they asked me if I would hold the script and read it. And I said to the director, "Well, how do I do it?" And he said, "Well, just first of all, turn the script upside down. You got it. You're looking at it the wrong way." Anyway, so I did that, and the next rehearsal, he didn't show up either. Finally, the director asked me if I would do the role. I said I wouldn't even know how to begin or what to do. And he said, "Well, it's not that tough. First of all, learn the lines. Secondly, speak them loud enough so they can hear you in the back row, and don't bump into the damn furniture." So those were my three most important acting lessons I ever got. And the show opened, and the L.A. Times had a person there that was doing a story on Little Theater, and he gave myself and the gal I was dating just great reviews. And one thing led to another, and somebody came backstage and wanted to represent me, and the next thing you know, I had an interview with Ida Lupino, who was doing a film, and she put me into that show, and that began a so-called career. Under contract Universal for 3 years, then at 20th Century Fox, the Wyatt Earp series came along, and at the time, there were three different series that were offered, and I chose the Wyatt Earp one because it was about a man who actually lived, and it was going to be the first adult Western on television, which the dialogue was legitimate. It was about people that actually lived, and the wardrobe was authentic. It wasn't checkered shirts. It was what they actually wore in those days, and that's one of the reasons why I think the show became such a top hit. Right away, it went into the top five on television, and it was 6 years, 18 pages of dialogue a day. It was a tough time in terms of what you had to accomplish doing two shows a week. But I really enjoyed it, and the people that I worked with, and it gave me opportunity to do a lot more things during the 3 or 4 months a year that we would have off. But basically, I began in theater, and that's why the shows on Broadway that I did, I enjoyed those so much. And up until about 15 years ago, I used to do at least two or three plays a year in theater.
Is it true that Audie Murphy once challenged you to a draw with real bullets?
That was a gag. That was a joke. I got to know Audie pretty well, and he kidded about that. But it wasn't. I don't think it would have ever come to pass, even if I had said yes, let's do that. You know, I think it was just kind of a joke.
We're talking to Hugh O'Brien. When we come back, we'll ask him about 9 days that transformed his life. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're talking to Hugh O'Brien, who in 1958 spent 9 days in Lambourine, West Africa. Hugh, can you share about those 9 days?
Sure. Well, it all came about because Norman Cousins, who was the publisher of the Saturday Review of Literature, made that invitation happen. And the friendship with Norman is another story in itself, but I don't think we have time to go into it now, but that's quite an interesting story. But anyway, the bottom line is that the invitation came to me, and he referred to me as Dr. O'Brien. He thought I was a doctor. And I flew over to Lambarini, Africa, and then from the dirt airstrip, about 9 miles upstream on the Ogallala River to the bank of where the clinic was. And it was a very, very fantastic experience, beginning right at the start when the people that were the paddlers, the natives, Afro-Americans, they were all, but turned out that they were lepers from the leper colony, and this is how they were repaying Schweitzer for their treatment. And it was considered quite an honor to be one of the paddlers, and one of the elders in the at the clinic would, or at the leper colony would, one of the rowers would die, paddlers rather than the one of the other people at the leper colony that earned the position would take over, and they provided the transportation to get doctors and nurses and people like myself upstream to see Dr. Schweitzer. At that point, he had won the Nobel Prize. He was a tremendous humanitarian, and his reverence for life was really intrigued me. And I did whatever I could during the anywhere from helping build baby cribs to passing out the food, whatever was necessary. And I never had less than 3 hours a night with the gentleman. And that story in itself is really going to take longer to get into. Maybe we can do it some other time. But it was a very, very impressive, inspirational visit. And when I left, he took me down to the river to put me into the pirogue with his cutout canoe, paddled by the 9 natives, and took my hand in his and looked at me with those unbelievable eyes of his, looked right down through your shoes. And he said to me, simply, Hugh, what are you going to do with this? Meaning, what are you going to do from what you've learned here for the time? I had no idea. And I got back downstream, got in the bush plane to take me to Douala, and from there back to Los Angeles. It took about 5 stops to get home. This is before the age of jets. It took over 48 hours. So I had a lot of time to think up there. And I made the decision that I was going to try to create something, make a break by my own efforts. It's not that I wasn't involved. I was on the national board of the Boys Club at the time. The head of cystic fibrosis, the chairman of that, and chairman of the American Cancer Society here in California. But in all those cases, I was just a fancy kind of a volunteer going around patting, people on the back. But with Hobie, I focused on 10th graders because when I was 15, that's when I personally had to decide to fish or cut bait to get 2 more years of fun and games, and then the old tough world's on top of you. And by the way, but 2 weeks after I got home, I had my first group of young people. We now have a little over 365,000 that have gone through the program. 100% of those have graduated from high school. And I get them when they're 15, 16 sophomores in high school. My first 15-year-olds are 65 going on 66. We're into our 50th year. And it's made possible by this unbelievable army of volunteers that we have in the field to put on the 75 sites that take place throughout the United States, Canada, Mexico, Korea, Thailand, China, Israel, and for quite a few years now, 3 actually, we have students in Iraq that go through the program. It's quite a fantastic way of reaching out to young people and turning them on to the great potential that they have, and also as an American citizen, the responsibilities they have in terms of making sure that we continue to have the kind of democracy that we have. And we plug our incentive system. You can truly be anything you want to in this world. You're not relegated to any specific job. You can do whatever you want, but education is really money in the bank, and that's something that I really push.
I'm Jack Krasula. We're talking to Hugh O'Brien, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Hugh O'Brien. Hugh, you're taking 12,000 15-year-old kids a year. Who selects those 12,000 kids?
The high schools. The nomination process begins under the auspices of NASP, the National Association of Secondary School Principals. The nomination goes into every public and private high school. They then make it available to the 10th grade class, and it's up to the school to select a guy or gal that they think is has got a good potential in terms of leading their peers, and they attend one of the Hobey programs, 3 to 4 day programs that takes place in every state in the spring of every year. For instance, yesterday over the weekend, we just had Arkansas had their program, and so did Delaware. Now, Delaware, Rhode Island, Wyoming, Nevada, Hawaii, they can get all of their 10th graders into one location. But when you get over 200 10th graders representing 200 high schools together, the energy level will blow you out of the room. So in the majority of the states, we have to have 2, 3, 4 in your bigger states, and Texas has 5 locations, all run by volunteers. There's nobody out there putting on that seminar that's being paid. We have a very small staff in Los Angeles. We have 4 regional directors, but that's it. The money goes where it's supposed to go.
You have 4,000 volunteers. Who are the volunteers?
Well, people like yourself. They're in different disciplines, whether it be business, government, education, or the professions. And again, they're on the firing line. They're out there making a buck, and they are the kind of people that are concerned about where we're going to be 20, 30 years from now. And these young people that go through the program are going to be running things. We average about 150 alumni on Capitol Hill in Congress or the Senate at any given time. We always have at least 15 at the White House, and about 400-plus at the State Department around the world. For instance, we have at the White House right now the gentleman that's responsible for the President's Budget Committee is one of my alumni. The gentleman that the legal staff at the White House, the head attorney, is one of my kids. When he was 15, went through the program. We have at the State Department the head of our United Kingdom desk, the area that takes care of and embraces that part of the world, is a young man who, when he was 15, went through my program. There's a lady in charge of the Iraqi desk, responsible for the interface with our ambassador there, and she's a Hobie. The gentleman running for the President of the United States, Mike Huckabee, who up until recently was the governor of Arkansas. Mike is one of my kids who went through the program. So they're out there, you know, running things, and that's what it's all about, to continue our way of life and to be responsible for hopefully staying a democracy and the kind of incentive system that we have.
12,000 kids a year, Hugh. How much does each 12,000 kids each year? What does each child pay, and where do you come up with the money?
You want to be careful. You don't want to call them a child because they're not. They're young adults, and that's how they're treated. And because they're treated with that kind of respect, we have total attendance attention at the various seminars. There are no speeches. If the president shows up, which he often does, you're given 3 or 4 minutes to humanize self and subject and then get into the Q&A with these guys and gals asking the tough question. The majority of the time are spent in panels, 3 to 6 experts on whatever the topic could be. It could be media, it could be the environment, it could be space, it could be medicine in the 21st century, it could be technology, it could be the future of nanotechnology. And each of the panelists are given 3 to 4 minutes to humanize self and subject, and then the rest of the 90 minutes is Q&A. These guys asking the tough question. And believe me, when they're 15, 16 years of age, there are a lot of tough questions. They're not holding back. They can ask very, very straight-out questions.
How do you fund this every year?
The folks at the local level, that's what's so fantastic about the program. All of those sites running at the local level, the volunteers raise the dollars. It costs, because of the fact that there's nobody there being paid, it costs about $300 for that student to attend, between $275 and $350, room and board, T-shirts, the whole ball of wax. The school is responsible for contributing a $150 registration fee, and that's what the schools are willing to do. And if they haven't got the $150, they'll normally go to a boosters club like the Lions or the Kiwanis or the women's clubs or Optimist, JC's. And that local club quite often will put their arms around the local high school for $150. And then the volunteers raise the rest of that from big business, small business, whatever. So you can actually put your arms around a whole high school and have that student attend for about $300, and that's a hell of a bang for the buck.
What have your kids taught you over these years?
What have they taught me?
Yes.
Well, they've made me quite comfortable in the fact that I think we're going to be fine in terms of where we're going to be 50-100 years from now. I do have a lot of concerns, as they do, about various things that they're faced with, that we are just coming up to realizing that there's going to be major problems in terms of global warming. They're going to be the ones that have to deal with that, but I think they're getting up to speed, and I think that that's one of the things, along with the real need to have peace in the world and better understanding and a better appreciation of the different points of view in different countries, and everybody's entitled to their own.
We're talking to Hugh O'Brien. When we come back, we'll continue to ask him about his kids and Hobie. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Hugh O'Brien. Hugh, you mentioned that you've got kids from the Middle East. Can you talk
again,
about...
they're not kids. They're young adults. They're, when you get out of grammar school and you go into high school, you become on the premise of... on the brink of becoming an adult, and that's the way they're treated, as young adults. And, you know, and so I'm very, very proud of the simple fact that 100% graduate from high school. That's a pretty phenomenal situation right there. We have, as I said, 365,000 plus that have been through the program, and my first guys and gals are 15. When they were 15, they came through the program. They're now 65. They're out there. We got people retiring. Anyway, I'll never retire.
So, the young adults that you've had from the Middle East, can you talk about them?
Well, the first group of young people, for instance, from Iraq, came about because we had 3 Hobie alumni on our coalition provisional authority over there, and they got in touch with me and said, we think it'd be great to have a Hobie program here. can you help us? And I said, sure. And I called the State Department. We got them involved. And my first group came over. There were five young people that they had selected to come over representing Iraq. And this will be our third year coming up at the World Congress. That's our Super Bowl. That takes place for 8 days at the end of July in Washington, D.C., at the great George Washington University. What makes it a World Congress is we'll have approximately 28 countries sending their top 10th graders to that to interface with our 400 students from around the country that are selected. That's our big Super Bowl.
How do you select the 400 finalists from these 12,000?
They're selected at the local level. Those that go through the program, the 12,000 that go through the local program, at the site, the 75 site, each site, at the conclusion of their 3 to 4 day Hobie program. By the way, Hobie, it's pronounced Hobie, and it's H-O-B-Y, it's short for my name, Hugh O'Brien Youth. And I would like to invite people that might be listening to please do me the honor of looking up our website. It's hoby.org, O-R-G for organization. I'd love to have you involved in any way you want to, and you can at the local level. It'll cost you nothing. Whether your gift being time or money, I guarantee it's a great return on the investment. But anyway, this year we'll have young people from Afghanistan. We'll have hopefully people from Iran. Iraq, certainly. We will also, for the first time, have students from the United Arab Emirates. I went over and spent 2.5 weeks there at the invitation of their ambassador to the United States and then under the auspices of the Ministry of Education. Education is extremely important to them over there. They consider it money in the bank. And so they asked me if I would come over and look into possibly putting on a World Youth Leadership Summit over there, which I'm going to do in the next year or two. But first, we'll have representatives come representing the youth of those seven Emirates at the World Congress. So we'll have about 14 from the United Arab Emirates attending this year.
In these last 50 years, 365 young adults that have gone through this.
Say that again.
In the last 50 years, 365,000 young adults have gone through this. How have the young adults changed in these 50 years?
Well, I think that there's obviously a lot more pressure on them. I think that because of television and because of, certainly now technology and the ability to communicate is so much beyond what anybody even can believe 20 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. I think that they are in many ways less personal. I think they also have a much broader reach mentality-wise in terms of what the heck is out there. But unfortunately, I think that there's also perhaps a little bit of a loss in terms of appreciation and understanding of how important it is to have been born and raised in this country, the United States of America. But I desperately think, and one of my main purposes in this latter part of my life, is to bring as many together from the world community for them to better understand each other and to appreciate and accept other disciplines, other religious point of views or whatever. Everybody's entitled to their own.
You've just turned 82. On April 19th, you turned 82. And within the last year, you married Virginia Barber, and it's your first marriage, Hugh O'Brien.
It is. It's also my last marriage. But I married my best pal. We've been going together for 20-some years. Virginia is a teacher, so she puts up with my 70 hours a week that I put into this program. She's just a tremendous person. I don't know if you said it because I couldn't hear you for a minute, but we got married at a cemetery here, Forest Lawn. And the main reason, well, there are many reasons we did that, and maybe on some other show, some other time, we don't have time probably now, but I'll tell you why we got married in a cemetery. But our honeymoon is worth talking about sometime also. I took her to Oxford University in England, and we both took a course on philosophy. That's how we spent our honeymoon, and then we took about 5 or 6 days and tooled around England. But it's kind of different, but I guess I do a lot of things that are different, and whatever it takes. I like the title of your show. I mean, I call it Whatever It Takes. Your philosophy is pretty interesting. I like it. I share it.
Thank you. What's your definition of success?
Being happy. It's that simple for me. If you're a happy person, then that to me is success. That's first and foremost. It's tough to find an occupation that you really, really love, and that you, when you get up in the morning, it's not, oh God, I got to go to work. It's, oh, I can't wait till I get there. I am fortunate in the fact that this part of my life is devoted to something that is, I not only look at it as an opportunity, I have fun doing it. I have communication with some of the greatest people in the world. And they're all, in their own way, those that are involved in this program. I don't know one of them that isn't happy. And they're happy doing what they're doing. Volunteerism is the number one and the biggest army this country or any country has.
Can you share with us, please, your thoughts on the freedom to choose?
Well, that happens to be the overall philosophy that I embrace. I can tell you what it says if you want me to take the time to do that.
Please.
And basically, this is what the theme of the background or the backbone of the HOVI program. And quite simply, and I'll just read this, it's, I do not believe we are all born equal. Created equal in the eyes of God, yes. But physical and emotional differences, parental guidance, varying environments, being in the right place at the right time, all play a role in enhancing or limiting an individual's development. But I do believe every man and woman, if given the opportunity and encouragement to recognize their own potential, regardless of background, has the freedom to choose in our world. Will an individual be a taker or giver in life? Will that person be satisfied merely to exist or seek a meaningful purpose? Will he or she dare to dream the impossible dream? I truly believe every person is created as the steward of his or her own destiny, with great power for a specific purpose to share with others through service, a reverence for life, and a spirit of love. And that's what I believe, and that's the backbone of what HOVI's all about.
Hugh O'Brien, what a phenomenal life. Dr. Schweitzer would be very proud.
I'm happy to have this opportunity to talk to you.
God bless. Our guest next Sunday will be a modern-day Renaissance man, Colonel Jack Lausma. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.